So I was thinking a bit about how for this retreat, it's been almost 3 months now, and we've been using what I think has been a very helpful theme, one of the most important themes that the Buddha spoke about, the Satipatthana. And I was reading one of the ways we were talking about is frames of reference, foundations of mindfulness, and I think Joseph Goldstein translates it as ways of establishing mindfulness. And then one of the things that I like also is just thinking of it as like tools of mindfulness. And so this theme has been quite a broad net, but I think been incredibly useful for our meditation practice and really exploring like what mindfulness is and how we cultivate it, how we use it, and how it's really very much integral and so incredibly useful for us. And during a retreat like this, I think it's very easy, kind of, to, for me, one of the reflections I've had is to sort of, we step into this space, and it's kind of like feeling things out, like what's this, like stepping into a pool of water, like what's this water like? Is it cold? Is it hot? Is it? And often that experience that we have of that, of this space, is really just a reflection of our own experience. So, you can hear some people sometimes saying like, oh, this was such a difficult retreat for me. Others like, this is the best retreat ever or whatever, mostly in the middle. And yet it's the same space. It's the same physical space that we're in. It's the same people. At least that's often our perception. We kind of try to map things out as in our minds as this is how it is. Like I'm in this place. I'm in a Bayagiri monastery. I know these particular people. Some of them I've lived with for 20 years, and on the mind goes. But mostly, there's a basic kind of simplicity about what it is we're doing. We're just trying to really settle our minds. We're trying to allow the dust to settle, the kind of all of the complexities, the hindrances, the problems we cause for ourselves in our lives. Essentially, the bad habits, the patterns that we keep getting ourselves into, those are trying to be sort of distilled and clearly seen. And that's, one of the main themes of the Satipatthana is just to see clearly, to know what's actually happening. And so for, the last 3 months, it might be quite a humbling experience for many of us. I know it is for me. Just how simple something like that sounds, to just know what's happening, to in as we were talking about the Bahiya Sutta with the just in the heard, there is the heard, in the seen, there is the seen. Just that our senses don't have to be more than that. What we're picking up doesn't have to be more than that, but it often is. It's often, I was just thinking about, I'm not sure how many of you have this experience, but just observing, sitting in meditation, and then someone comes into the room, and the mind immediately goes, who's that? Who's making the steps or the sounds, or there's someone sitting next to us. And for the monastics, we usually know who's around us. So the mind can kind of immediately go towards that if it's distracted in a way, like, oh, that's so and so. And sometimes we can get caught in that. And it's such a good reflection because it's like, oh, here he comes again. Or, oh, this person, we might be upset by the particular cloth that they're wearing is too loud when they sit down. Or they thump when they walk, or whatever. The breathing is too loud. Why can't they just stop breathing? And on the mind goes, and it can be as totally illogical as that too. It's just these strange ideas of what would make us happy. And so when we're on a retreat like this, we're just essentially kind of trying to see clearly into our own patterns, and seeing that, some of them are helpful to us. Some of them are patterns of behavior, patterns of being that have been useful to us. That's why we continue them. But a lot of them are not. We could even say that sometimes most of them are not, because sometimes they're just moving us in that wrong direction there. But we keep following them. We keep following these patterns, hindrances, the pathways that we're very familiar with. And so when we're on a retreat like this, it's not like it's necessarily so different what it is we're doing with our practice. We're still utilizing the Buddhist teachings in the same way, but because the way that the retreat works and the fact that it's, you know, we do have this very kind lay support crew who's here, the lay support team who's supporting us, but also for all of you who are supporting us, you're also not leaving during this time, so there's not this kind of revolving door around guests coming in and out of the monastery. And so it's very useful, you know, all the monks. In fact, the winter retreat is much more a time where the monastics stick around than the Vasa, where we actually have rules around when we can and can't leave the monastery. But the winter retreat stands out actually much strongly in that way, that we're all here together. And we're, you know, so we kind of are creating this particular space. And I think it's interesting for me because, like, right now it's sort of the bookend of this time and this space that we've set aside. And as Ajahn Kurunama was bringing up last night, like the mind can start going into planning and what's next. And for the retreat, there can be a time of that being frustrated because there isn't really a lot of what next. There's just kind of days that stretch on into weeks. And our meditations can sometimes... They can be up and down, and we can perceive them as good and bad. But we're always trying to get that perspective of settling and then just seeing clearly, and watching, you know, and really trying not to make too big of a deal out of anything. You know, some of the things I know that themes that happen in retreats is people can get down in the kind of negative, difficult problems, and it seems like this is it, this is forever. It's like some sort of bad drug trip, and one thinks that one's just stuck in it, and then it changes. Or other times when we have some sort of very special meditation that was very unusual for us, and we can take that very personally, or we can make something very big out of it. But it's again, that theme of just knowing. Just seeing clearly and understanding, and then coming back to our motivation. You know, what is our motivation for why we're doing this? And that's something that's not often asked. Sometimes we forget. We're just doing it because this is what I'm a Buddhist and that's what I do. But oftentimes, just asking ourselves, you know, why are we sitting here? What's the reason for even listening to this talk? What's the motivation? Is it because you have to be here at 6 o'clock? Maybe you don't want to be listening to this, but still there's something that you can ask yourself, like, well, what is, even if there's something present like that that's unskillful, like, I'd rather not, I don't want to, or I don't like, you know, can I learn from that? Can I ask myself that if I pay attention to what my experience is and I watch it, what is it telling me? What can I learn from it? You know, how is that, what is that highlighting? And coming back to the motivation of it, like, why am I here? You know, I don't mean why am I here, like, why do I exist, but what's my reason? What's my reason for sitting and quieting the mind? Because without that question, then I think, unfortunately, we just get into kind of a rote practice of another thing Ajahn Kurundama was pointing out. It's called Silabhata Paramasa, sort of attachment to rites and rituals, or just patterns and behaviors that we do. We can do that with our sila, with our, you know, how we're practicing with morality. Just if I do these things, I'm a, you know, a good boy or a good girl, and I'm gonna go to heaven, or I'm gonna get a good result. But there actually the sila is not only that it benefits ourselves and others, but it's also a reflective tool. So it, you know, it comes back to the sense of using what the Buddha's teachings are, continuing to see them as tools, and how we can learn from them, and we can learn how to hold them right and use them correctly. Because the sense of, like, you know, as we've touched upon Anapanasati for quite a bit with a theme of meditation, you know, we can get sort of just use it, but not really get a lot out of it because we're not pushing it. We're not moving it towards our motivation, or we forget what our motivation is. And so it's very important. This is like a measured thing that we can do during the retreat, is to really ask ourselves, you know, why we're here? Why are we doing this? You know, for the monastics, it's sometimes, why am I wearing these robes? What's the point? What's the point of this whole affair? And it can seem sort of obvious, like, because it's very high and lofty, you know, what the Buddha's teachings are. But that can be lost in our own minds. It's not necessarily something that comes automatically or stays. You know, it can come in waves sometimes in our lives as practitioners. So we're essentially stepping into this kind of space and then seeing, you know, what it's like, a very different experience than the rest of the year, where to be honest, it can be quite a trial when you're practicing with lots of activity and speech, and it's not something that I would say is inferior, but it's definitely something more challenging when we're not on retreat and we're really trying to do our best cultivating our minds, because a lot of things are kind of coming at us in different ways that are a little bit faster, more, and we have to be very careful. So again, like a retreat like this is very useful for not only sometimes resetting our kind of motivation and our practice and understanding, but also like seeing it as like, yeah, like you step into a pool and you step out of that pool. And there's not something necessarily bad about that. I know that sometimes people can become retreat addicts. And I remember meeting a man many years ago, like 30 years ago or so, and he was telling me how, like, yeah, he just goes retreat after retreat after retreat. He doesn't do anything else really. But it was, I could see that there was something holding him back. There was some very strong attachment to that as a way of life, and then also like maybe a bit of stunted learning, because it is actually very useful for us to think of this as I'm developing a particular tool here, you know, a tool to see how the mind settles in this particular space, and then to take that and use that, you know, apply that. So I, you know, just in asking, for example, some of the lay support team here, just, oh, when are you leaving, or what are your plans? And there are plans. There are plans for what's going to happen next. Where am I going? What am I doing? You know, and the same for some of the monastics, as Ajahn Kurundam was pointing out. We have a sense of like leaning forward and what's next. But we juxtapose that to the beginning of the retreat, you know, the bookend that started it, you know, and like, oh, okay, I'm entering this space, and there's excitement and interest, and hopefully that's still there. But it's not, you know, the thing that, one of the things that Lumpur points out, you know, if you ever ask him about, you know, well, how do you practice differently in this, when you do this way and when you do that? And he says, well, I don't practice differently. It's the same practice. You know, it's just a different set of circumstances. You know, so it's very helpful for us, especially if we're, sometimes there's a lamenting like it's over and oh no, and or there's this kind of charge of like, all right, now I'm going to get into some heavy work, or I'm going to do this and that. And really how beneficial it is to remind ourselves that, again, it's just like sitting in one of the many hours of meditation we had during this retreat and watching how the mind just starts chewing on something and creating something out of really nothing, because that's what it constantly sort of wants to do. And our goal is to see clearly into what's going on, so we can stop suffering. We can stop enabling ourselves to create the circumstances around suffering, you know, through our, essentially what is desire, you know, wanting something to be a particular way that isn't necessarily in line with reality, or in line with Nibbana, in line with awakening. One of the themes that Ajahn Kurundama was talking about, I think he was quoting Bhante Ji yesterday around renunciation and transcendence. Is that it? Bhikkhu Bodhi, sorry, okay. Because that was one of the things that it said is like what's sometimes missing with Buddhist practice in the West, and that's the themes of renunciation and transcendence are very interesting, because that renunciation, for myself, is it becomes kind of like it's some sort of like humorous to me sometimes, because I can often see in my own mind like, if you really want to benefit yourself, this would be something good to give up, whatever this is. Just fill in the blank. And then, tomorrow, or after the retreat's over. And we see that in ourselves. I mean, I doubt I'm the only one, this sort of weaseling negotiation. And it's tough because it takes some power to surmount that. It takes some effort. This is what the Buddha is really encouraging us for. This isn't just like a kind of lie down kind of religion. It's really like you move with it. You kind of take on some difficult experiences, and sometimes that takes some good talking through it with yourself. Just like, come on, you can do this, or how difficult is it? And the irony is when we finally do give certain things up that we are addicted to in a certain way, or we have patterns around, it's funny that sometimes it's like, wow, why did I care that much? Like, it really doesn't feel like it's that strong. But we have to be careful, because it is easy sometimes when that happens, not easy, but it's easy to see that like, oh, that wasn't so hard. But then whatever that pattern was, it doesn't mean that the underlying problem, the underlying desire, let's say, for something, isn't still there. It just might subvert itself in another direction, in another way. And so we have to be wise to that. We have to be very careful. But it's, I think all of us, to a certain degree, struggle, I would assume, with renunciation and, giving things up, not being attached to them. Letting go, and it's hard. It's. I think it's easy sometimes. You can see others struggling with it, it's even easy to think like, well, I know what he should give up, But it's really hard to kind of look at ourselves and say and encourage ourselves in the right direction in that way, because if we don't, then we're just moving towards getting what we want, And no matter how hard we're going to practice without any sense of that renunciation, we can't get the full fruits of practice, because we have to be able to give up that which is causing us suffering. There's no way around it. That is the definition, isn't it, of awakening. I mean, you've given up all those things that you are causing yourself to suffer with. You've let go of them. And so there's a release. But unfortunately, what we sometimes emphasize is like, do I feel good? Am I feeling pleasant? And one of the things that we often hear in themes is we do need to focus on happiness to a certain degree. We are motivated by pleasure. We are motivated by a sense of feeling good. And there's not something bad about that. It's just that what we want to motivate ourselves towards is different than sort of the worldly pleasure. And so we're kind of, it's more like when we're in a retreat like this, sometimes we can see, we get a sense a little bit more like, okay, the mind is, wow, it's really steady right now. And I am able to see clearly, and actually, wow, that's very pleasant. The hindrances are not arising as much as they usually, they're not so overpowering. And we might feel actually that the way that we're paying attention, there's a sort of wieldiness around it. There's a sort of like strength to the mind. And that can be very enjoyable. But it's not something that for everyone, you know, comes up so easily. And so we have it, and we might have that kind of experience, and then we either can grasp after it, which isn't very helpful, or lament that it doesn't, you know, happen as much, or we don't necessarily pay attention to the conditions that are creating it. And therein lies the tale of why the Buddhist teachings and this practice are so difficult, because it's not, there's no instant gratification in our practice. You know, this is a very slow burn, very slow. And admittedly, there are some very rare beings in the world that's not the case, perhaps because of many lifetimes before. There's been a lot of cultivation. But it seems to me that the majority of people, it's you know, practice can be difficult and the results can be slow. But the more that we have experiences where we are seeing clearly, and the hindrances are being set aside, and we are gaining more understanding, and you know, it might just be something where we're in a conversation with somebody and we want to say something unskillful and we don't, but we also notice that we didn't do that. You know, that's the other aspect. And I say, oh wow, that was beneficial, and it felt good. I didn't lean into kind of a pettiness or a negativity around somebody, or a critical tendency with that person. And then we feel brighter because of that. So a lot of the times, you know, it's two steps forward and one step back. And so on a retreat like this, we can see that a lot. You know, 1 week the mind's in a particular funk, and then we have several days where it might be quite alive and interested, and we can be very motivated by that. But then there's the doldrums. There's a kind of not much going on sometimes, over and over there's the potential to really see, like, well, what, you know, is it? Am I demanding that of my practice, that that's what it is? It's just a pleasant, you know, I'm just always seeking like a pleasant experience, or is it more about really learning? You know, am I learning patience? Am I learning to be kind to myself? Am I learning about interest and how to motivate my own interest? So, you know, we have this opportunity, and I'm very grateful that it's possible to have this kind of space at Abhayagiri to practice in this way. And of course, one of the nice things I think for the lay support team is, you probably sense this, but you're sort of also in a field of gratitude, because all of the monastics are, you know, to one degree or another, we're very much, there's just a huge amount of gratitude for the gift, the dana that's been done. And so that also, one of the beautiful aspects of the retreat is that we get to not only benefit from that dana, we benefit from our kind of feeling of gratitude, and then, you know, I hope that's felt from all of our supporters. But there's sort of like enjoyment of being given to. It's like it's this beautiful gift, and then there's that sense of like, yeah, I need to practice. I need to kind of put my mind to this and be worthy of that gift. That's the gift back. And just that kind of, so that, I guess I'm just kind of talking around the theme of the retreats and the retreats like this, especially the long winter retreats, and how beneficial they are for us. And really, like, they're not, you know, that the beautiful aspect of it is it's not necessarily something that's so easy. You know, it's oftentimes when you ask, you know, I'll ask someone how their retreat went. It was, you know, it was good. Yeah, it was good. It was very difficult. Oh, but quite good. And that's sort of, I think, helpful thing to really kind of think about. Like, is it, are we up for that? Are we up for the difficulty to know that that is how we learn, that's how we understand, and that is how happiness arises? Because we learn so many of these skills that the Satipatthana is teaching us, that the Buddha is teaching us, around how to understand clearly, and how to, you know, bring that up. So we're actually getting more and more used to using a tool, you know, to using the Buddha's teachings as something that's useful, and we're getting skilled in that use, and we're knowing, like, oh, now would be a time for me to focus on you know, an aspect of the body. Like, it was nice to hear people talking about their practice of a subhakamatan, you know, the 32 parts of the body, or as Lumpur was mentioning, the elements, and just knowing that there are, you know, there are times when it's good to try something and say, like, how can I really utilize this and learn about this particular tool. So yeah, there's just some themes that I was thinking of, and I'm very happy with how the retreat has gone, and very grateful for the monastics' practice and the lay support team here, their practice, both their practice of devoting to meditation, but also of course the dana and all of the gifts that were given to us in that way. And one of the things that is so helpful for us as we, you know, as kind of those of us who are monastics, or anyone who's been, you know, around kind of the monastery for a while, is just how supportive it is to have senior monks around, and having Lumpur and Ajahn Kirindamo here for the retreat has been such an incredible gift. And the benefit of you know, their excellent practice and their teachings. So anyway, just wanted to say a few words on that.